coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this very special pre-recorded episode of The Curious Realm. I am currently right now in Orlando, Florida, but as always, we are bringing you new content. Tonight, we have some amazing guests. In the second part, we are joined by our good friend David Tran. He is one of the competitors and perceptualists at Psy Games. He won last year in his division, and we will be talking about training Psy abilities. He is somebody who naturally came about his abilities. They were never denied his whole life. His family never denied them. So he has had access to them. But in the last year or so, he has actively started training those abilities and honing them. And discovered some interesting things along that path. So we will be talking in the second part with David about training Psy abilities. In the first part, we are joined by our good friend CJ Arabia. She is with MUFON. She is the Southwest Regional Director. And as Regional Director, also the Proxy Director for the state of Oklahoma, which right now, she once again is the interim director for, and that's what we're here to talk about, is Oklahoma UFO and MUFON cases. So welcome, CJ. Welcome back. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. It's so good to be back speaking about Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
In Southern California.
The hat of Texas, Oklahoma is.
Yeah.
But
it's true.
Number one, congratulations on the move and becoming the Southwest Regional Director. That is a large position to take over. Extends all the way to Hawaii.
So, it does.
So yeah, you have quite the job ahead of you and quite a few cases, and it's been great to kind of coordinate with you as far as connecting with state directors, things like that, to bring on the show and talk about cases in their state. And as we talked about that, it was like, well, let's do Oklahoma, because you were just learning of some of the cases up there, things like that.
Exactly. I've been diving into Oklahoma. So yeah, so Southwest Territory is California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and Oklahoma and Hawaii. So we've got, I think it's 7 or 8 states, and Oklahoma is the only one right now that doesn't have a state director. The last state director retired. And so I will be the interim until I can find someone. And that's what I'm here for. I'm talking to you guys in Oklahoma, hoping to get some of you to sign up. Join us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, MUFON, let's pop that website up again just so everybody can find it. Especially this section right here, the file a report section. That is, I mean, we have a report section on Curious Research, on Curious Realm. There are numerous reporting systems out there. However, I will say MUFON is probably the oldest standing reporting system that is there right now, that has been continuously operating.
Continuous. That's what I was going to say. The oldest continuous.
There are others out there that are technically by name older. But this is the oldest continuing operating. And it's pretty amazing the number of cases, especially there in California, Southern California, which is your home district. The number of cases that you guys take in there is just massive.
Yeah it's crazy how it'll be like, oh, it's quiet for a week, and then boom. you look and you go, oh my god, there's 10 cases right now. They just all got submitted. Like, it must be in the air, because that's kind of how it happens, you know. And there's, you know, Texas is huge, Florida is huge, they get a ton of cases, and you know, in Southern California and all of California really too.
Well, let's start digging into some of these cases that you're talking about.
I'm going to talk about a few things. So, Yeah, let's talk about, so I wanted to mention, so in my deep diving, so I've been reaching out to former state directors and former field investigators, and I met Marilyn Hudson, and she was the last state director for Oklahoma. She's retired. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, Sooner Saucers, she wrote, and I just started reading it, and if you live in Oklahoma and you're interested in the topic of UFOs, honestly, I mean, it's a must read. She gives you a good, solid background, just covering like the periods from Project Sign, Grudge, and Blue Book. And she found like 73 cases of substance in the state of Oklahoma between in that time period. And Marilyn is just like an expert when it comes to all things UFO in Oklahoma. She's on Facebook. I'd say go friend her and talk to her if you're in Oklahoma. She's a great lady, really awesome, very helpful. And, you know, I thank her for her service. And that book is amazing. It's $10. Pick it up. Check it out if you're in Oklahoma. And we're just moving forward now and looking for some more people to join the team in Oklahoma. There's 4 million people in the state of Oklahoma. A few of you could probably join MUFON and join our team here. We're looking for field investigators. And I guess one of the cool things about it is, you know, look, if you're interested in UFOs or you've seen a UFO, you filed a report with MUFON, or maybe you're just one of those people who has like a video on your phone that you've been thinking about filing and you haven't yet, file it. Get click those buttons that Chris just showed you at the top of the page and send it in. And the great thing about MUFON is there are a lot of places to report to. And not a lot of them are going to reach out to you with a field investigator, a human to, I know you will, Christopher, but
yeah,
but you know, a lot of them won't, like, yeah, exactly. You'll get Chris, right? You'll get Chris. If you report to Chris, you'll get Chris. And that's the other thing. You can report to multiple agencies just because you reported to one, like, you know, I reported to MUFON, which is how I ended up becoming a member and how I ended up becoming a field investigator, like mostly because like none of my friends care about UFOs. My partner, like literally his eyes glaze over when you talk about UFOs, like you're just talking about a unicorn that you saw at the corner or something, you know, it's just not, he's never seen anything supernatural. You know, he calls himself a UFO muggle. Like he's just never seen anything like that. And it just doesn't process, you know, in his head. And so like the cool thing about MUFON, like I remember like getting tears in my eyes at my first MUFON meeting only because I had never been in a room full of people who didn't doubt what I was saying and who looked at me like I was serious and like what I was saying was interesting and not like, come on, you know?
Yeah.
And it's different now because obviously there's been more hearings and things in the government and, you know, legitimate, respectable people coming forward that even my partner of 20 years, I call him my boyfriend because we're not married, but like even he is like, there's obviously something to this, like, you know, and he is like one of the biggest skeptics out there. So if you're interested in any of that, we need field investigators in Oklahoma. I'm talking to the world, but I'm talking to people in Oklahoma. Like join MUFON, become a member. And then you can reach out to me. MUFONCJ@gmail.com is one of my email addresses and just say, hey, I'm in Oklahoma. I'm interested in becoming a field investigator. What can I do? And I will help you. I'll walk you through the process. But, you know, we have MUFON University. Like you don't have to be a genius. We have had people from NASA working for us and police chiefs and cops and detectives. We have all these kind of people work for us, but like I'm the housewife that works for us too, because I have the time and the interest and the passion for it. So you don't have to have a degree in science or anything like that. We will teach you to identify the prosaics. If you join MUFON and you take the field investigator test, you get the manual, you're going to be assigned to like somebody who's been doing this for years. You're going to be mentored and you're going to be like, I can't even believe what I can identify like that now. You know what I mean? Like I know SpaceX, a bug, a satellite, the space station, Sirius, hoaxes, Chinese lanterns, like so many things that when I first got here, I probably would have been like, oh, what's that? That's a UFO. And now I can just go, I see what that is now. And we're going to train you to be able to identify them like that as well. So we're just looking for people to get involved in the area, the whole state of Oklahoma, anywhere in Oklahoma. And we want to get some meetings going. Like it's been a while since there was an in-person or even an online meeting in Oklahoma. And You know, right? Like, yeah. It's fun to get with your people. Like, it's cool. And you're, look, everyone in the country is welcome to join Southern California MUFON. We do our meetings online. You can come and watch. It's free. But to be with people in your area, to be able to talk to people in your area, someone you might be able to meet in person, that's cool. That's fun. And that, I mean, that's what MUFON's about, right? That's like, MUFON is about like the people meeting in the back of the coffee shop. Like, it's not about these, to me, like, right? I know some people want these huge meetings that are online, but to me, it's about like the really passionate people, like meeting in the library, meeting in the back of the coffee shop and talking about what they saw and asking questions. And that's what I want to help to foster and create in Oklahoma again, because right now we're kind of starting from scratch. We need more field investigators and a state director and all sorts of things. So, yeah. And then just everybody out there in Oklahoma as well. If you have something on your phone or you've seen something, report it. You know, we usually get, let's go down here. Talking about joining. Oh, yeah. Like the basic membership in MUFON is like $7 a month or $60 a year. And like, that's it. Then you can get the higher up memberships. And like, I pay the $29, you know, extra to get the MUFON. It's hard to see with my backdrop, right? Forget it. It's a beautiful.
Hey, look,
color.
I have one right here.
Show it, because I've got a background, because I'm a hoarder. And this is just, I'm sitting in a hoarder's paradise, and I don't want it.
I'm the same way. It's nothing but synthesizers and books on the strange and mysterious.
I know, but yours is so organized, and you have the beautiful lighting on it. Like, if I had better lighting on my books or my piles of clothing, oh, geez, I got to stop that.
Notice you get to see an corner of my four-cornered room, CJ. All right.
Right.
The rest of it is an outward manifestation of what's going on inside my head. It's exploded everywhere.
That's like Earl's house. When I went to Earl's house and saw the little area that he would always, Earl Grey Anderson, for anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, the little tiny corner of this spare bedroom that was just piles and piles and piles of stuff. And then his little chair with a little area, a bookshelf, and that was where he would sit and talk to everybody.
A perfection spot that is for camera.
Exactly.
Like, no, I got
and all his UFO stuff piled on the bookshelf. So
exactly.
And
same.
I don't live in Oklahoma, but I've been there several times, and I'll probably be driving through again this summer. We drive across the country almost every year with our kid in the car and the dogs, and I just love Oklahoma. It's just beautiful. So
absolutely. Well,
so I've been
speaking of the Sooner State.
Yes.
Let's sooner get into these videos.
Yeah. So let's talk. First, I want to touch on a little bit of statistics. So I kind of dove into our CMS.
Do it.
And I wanted to talk about, so Oklahoma's cool, but there are some hot spots. Oklahoma City, I get a lot of reports from there. Tulsa and the TP Mountains out near Blair. And then a lot of the border between Oklahoma and Texas. People see a lot of triangles, but we'll get to that in a minute. So, MUFON gets like roughly 80 or 90 reports from Oklahoma every year, but we have like, you know, exciting years like 2022 and 2023. There was higher than average. It was more like 120, 130 cases in those years. Yeah.
That's
it can pop
12
up.
A month.
Yeah. People are seeing things and they're reporting them, you know, and, we get them from all over. But the cool thing about Oklahoma is you get everything from the SpaceX to the UFOs to contact experiences and cattle mutilation, which I don't see here in Southern California. I would love to get a case like that in Southern California, but you do see that in the in our content management system in Oklahoma. So let's talk about the craft, the most commonly reported kind of craft in Oklahoma. So spheres, you know, a ball, a sphere, most popular or most commonly reported, it's like 20% of our reports in Oklahoma are a sphere. But the other ones that are very popular in Oklahoma or, you know, the most seen, most reported are the circles, discs, star-like objects, and triangles. So then I started digging into some historical information. So between 1947 and 1969, the U.S. Air Force Project Blue Book and other projects documented over 800 UFO cases within the state of Oklahoma.
Wow.
And I know that's a lot, right? I was like, whoa, I don't know how many, you know, there are just reports, you know, that some of them could be just prosaic or whatever, but that's a lot, I thought. And then, there was a surge in sightings in 1977 and through 79 that, and particularly Pawhuska area, Pawhuska. I hope I'm saying that right. Please tell me in the comments if you're in Oklahoma if I'm saying that wrong. And along I-35, people were describing seeing a revolving object around the 135 or the I-35. So yeah. I thought that was interesting, and I would love to see what this revolving object looked like. And then 1989, also significant amount of reports in 1989, including a five light cluster, which I'm assuming is a V, right? Two, two, and one in the middle, witnessed near a plant in Commerce County. And then there's a big case in 1975 in the Miracle Mountains boarding school. And this is case 116768 in the MUFON files. So it was a case of interest, and it was a historical case, meaning it was reported more recently, but it happened in the 70s. So it was a historical case when it was reported in the Hartshorne area, and Hartshorne. And a lot of people compared this to the aerial school in Australia, Zimbabwe and other encounters that are in Australia. So, a young girl reported it. Her and her brother were at a boarding school outside of Hartshorne, Oklahoma in 1974. There were at least 12 people there, she said. 10 of them were kids. Two were adults. It was around 5 or 6 p.m. and they noticed an object up near the clouds that was hovering and moving very slowly. As the craft got closer, they could see more detail. It was definitely a disc that had lights going all the way around the middle of the rim. The craft was guesstimated to be between 30 and 45 feet in length. It got down to about 60 feet from the witnesses that were gathered at this boarding school. And one of the little girls started screaming. She was very scared. And then a boy ran into one of the buildings. This is the 70s, grabs a long gun. I'm assuming a rifle of some sort. Yeah. He's going to protect the people, right? And when he came out with the gun to aim it at the craft shot off to the south. And there were multiple witnesses to this event. We don't obviously have any photos or video of this event, but that's one of the kind of substantial, you know, encounters of the 70s in Oklahoma. Yeah, interesting, right? So, and then in 2012, there was a surge along the Oklahoma-Texas border. And this is where you can pull up the triangle video that I sent you. And this is a more recent triangle, just giving you an idea of the kind of reports that we get. But we have many cases in the CMS in Oklahoma that are near the Oklahoma-Texas border with triangles or Pentagon type, you know, like a pyramid, which was kind of what was reported at the Pentagon. Remember that one that was hovering over the Pentagon? That was that a diamond or a pyramid, right?
Yeah, no, it was a pyramid.
Yeah, it was like a pyramid. So this one, and she's cursing in this, so we don't want the volume up.
Okay.
I don't know if, see it. Keep it muted. There's a lot of cursing. But this is out near Lone Wolf, which is kind of, you know, not far from the border, relatively speaking, near the Panhandle area. And this is August 8th in 2023 at around 9:30 p.m. And yeah, see that like triangular light? I don't know what that is. I did not investigate these cases. As you know, I was not in Oklahoma MUFON at that time. And then it kind of looks like it turns and it kind of disappears from view.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know what that is. I couldn't tell you. She says when we saw it, it was roughly a mile or so away. It looked stationary. They could see red and yellow looking lights. It rotated or turned, and then it slowly started going south. It fired, is her word, something out of it, but not fast like a missile or anything, but it kind of shot something out of it, a projectile, and then it slowly and the projectile moved away from it. And once it turned.
And I can see what she's talking about there.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say my initial assessment of it would have been you are looking at a unique angle of an airplane. With the approach lights and the TSA beacon or the FAA beacon,
maybe
that's banking that's banking away from you. However, it's that part right here where this separates, and you can see it right there.
Yeah, there's something
where something separates and goes a decent distance away from the triangle.
Yeah. Like, and it could be that's a plane, not Trump's hand.
That's a good distance away.
Yeah. It's hard to tell what it is. I don't know. And there was nothing transponding in that area. It doesn't mean it's not a plane. It doesn't mean there isn't a prosaic explanation for it. It just means the investigator at the time could not find an explanation for it.
That brings up a couple things as far as investigative tools used by MUFON and their field investigators and things that are brought up in training, you know, things like Flight Radar 24. Great, great app. Love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. But what a lot of people do not realize, MUFON does, and they train you to know this, but what a lot of people looking at Flight Radar, when they're like, it doesn't pop up on Flight Radar, it's like most military aircraft will not pop up on Flight Radar. Just so you're aware, like if you're near a military base, like 3/4 of those airplanes and helicopters are not going to pop up on your Flight Radar. International flights don't necessarily pop up. It's a very specific FAA beacon that pops up on Flight Radar 24, and not all flights are required to have it. Like, I see reports all the time here in Texas on social media, and people are like, I'm in El Paso. And it's like, you realize that there's an international airport right across the border from you. And 90% of those airplanes do not need an FAA transponder on them because they are not coming or going to America.
Exactly. And there's other reporting apps and things, and you'd have to go, it would take forever to go through all of them to really, you know what I mean? So sometimes you have to just say it, I can't identify it, but you know what? It really does look like a plane. And I'm not referring to this video, but you know, sometimes you're just using your expertise and the fact that you've seen hundreds of cases or dozens of cases, depending on how long you've been here. But isn't that interesting? It is interesting, isn't it?
That is an interesting one. And once again, you know, it very much because airplane wise, once again, it would be going away from you or coming toward you. I would say going away just by the way that the lights disappear. But once again, that part where it looks right here, where like something splits off from it, is the strangest part. That's the most curious part
it is curious. It is curious indeed. I would put this in the curious realm.
Yeah.
In this case.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Right.
So, this one, once again, to realize that right there, Texas, Oklahoma border, you are looking at a few military bases, things like that. You know, like Dallas is,
it can just be us.
Dallas is all of an hour's drive away from Oklahoma. They are very, very close, the DFW Metroplex. And you're looking at Lockheed being right over there. You know, there's a Lockheed plant in Fort Worth, on the skirts of Fort Worth and Dallas.
It could be military. It could be a lot of things. It doesn't mean it's ET. It doesn't mean it's an alien. It's just interesting. Not. Wasn't transponding, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a kite. Could be a night kite. You know, like, who knows? Like, I mean, I will get into that later, but I, you know, I had a case where I'm not sure what it is. I'm kind of leaning toward it. We'll get to that in a minute.
We'll get to it.
But exactly. So, let's see. So then SpaceX. I just wanted to show a few SpaceXs to the folks in Oklahoma because what happens is they launch from Kennedy. It goes all the way around the globe and then it comes back 90 minutes later. It's coming back over the United States again. And what the report will often sound like when we get it is, I saw an orb with a fuzzy aura around it. And that right there, that's SpaceX. And I'm guessing about 90 minutes after the launch, you just have to do the math, right? If you go to look up Google Space, if you see something like this, just Google SpaceX launches, you're probably going to see a launch from Kennedy or California approximately 90 minutes before you see this. It's the second orbit around the globe when it starts to look like this. It's higher in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And sometimes just the atmosphere has enough moisture in it and stuff like that and distortion that it just gives it this fuzzy glow. And I can't tell you how many pictures I've gotten sent to me from friends and family and people that are like, oh my God, look what I saw. And I'm like,
To the point of fact that when you go and click file a report on MUFON, first thing you see is, please do not file a report if you observe any of the identified events below. And the first thing is a SpaceLink Starlink train of satellites.
Yeah.
The second is a Falcon 9 rocket reentry.
Yeah.
Which looks like, you know, a spinning spiral, also tends to look like a jellyfish in the sky.
Yeah.
Or that orb that you just saw on that video. Depends on what angle you're viewing things from and how much ionization, because that's what's happening at that point, is that this heated object is falling through the atmosphere and being ionized by the different layers of atmosphere and its heat. So
that's
what you're seeing.
We get reports from pilots and all kinds of people. Like, it fools everybody. Like, until you know, you don't know. You know what I mean? Until you know, you don't know. You haven't seen it before. Like, if you haven't been out at night to see it, you're just going to not know. But they're so pretty and so cool. So if you see something like this, take some video and get it on social media and tell everybody you saw SpaceX.
Well, and you know, one of the most important things I've hear from people all the time about why they don't report, you know, like, I'm sure somebody else did. Maybe. Hopefully everybody didn't take the attitude you're taking right now about maybe somebody else did. Somebody else reported. I ain't going to report. Somebody else reported.
Maybe.
But the thing is, when you have more than one report, when you have more than one sighting from the same proximity, the same 30, 40 mile radius, even 100 mile radius, I saw mine to the east and they're located to the west and the person in the west saw it to the east. Now you got something like you've begun triangulation at that point.
Exactly.
You can start confirming various things even by just two sightings being
it's
in
so
that kind
helpful.
Of way.
But so, that's what I tell people a lot. I say, you know, it may not seem like a big deal to you, but you might be confirming something, somebody's abduction or somebody,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, or, you know what I mean? You might be confirming another case. So even if it seems small, like when in doubt, report it. When in doubt, report it. Well, you don't know what it is. You know, if you're like, I think it's SpaceX, but maybe it's not. Just write that in the report. I think it could be SpaceX, but it also made me think maybe not. And we'll decide. We'll get in there and we'll look and we'll see what we think. But I can't tell you how many times I've had someone in the military say, I wish the other guys that were there with me would file a report. Is there anyone? Yeah. And I'll look and I'll say, I don't see any of the other reports of this event, you know? And they're like, I wish somebody would, you know, just like you would really, you're really helping other people when you file the report, you know? And you can say, I don't need a phone call. I just want this in the record. I just want this in the system. You know, there's a space where you can type a message and you can say, not really interested in talking to anybody, but I just wanted to report this in case it's helpful to somebody. Like, just do it. It only takes a few minutes. And, you know, one of the cool things is in the next couple of months, it's not out yet, but we have a new app that's going to be launching in a whole new reporting system that's going to make reporting so much easier for everybody. So just stay tuned out there. You'll see it all over the Facebook pages and all of our social medias when that launches. That's going to be so cool and awesome. That'll be great.
And the main thing is that your sighting, whether it remains unsolved or whether it's solved immediately. Like we say it all the time. We need more red circles. We need more images with red circles because that's how we define the known quantitative. If we can't fully define the known quantitative, then we cannot narrow down the anomaly. And the more we know about the known quantitative, the narrower the gap of the anomaly gets.
Exactly.
So report it.
Report it. And you're helping our field investigators. You're training our new field investigators as well. The new ones that haven't cut their teeth on a space. You know, everyone has to see, every field investigator needs to get some SpaceX cases from different angles, different times from launch, you know, right at launch, 90 minutes later. What does it look like later in the night when it's gone around a few times? Like, you know, so just report it. You're helping us. You're helping somebody. You're at least helping the field investigators that are learning, the young ones, the new ones coming up.
Speaking of other SpaceXs, this is the second video.
Yeah, and it often looks like that. So you get a report, oh my God, I saw a UFO right above the trees. Well, it's actually really far away, but it looks so cool, and it does look like it's right above the trees, right?
Yeah, it looks like it's right there.
And yeah.
Once again, if not reported, if not brought in, you know, you never know. You don't know.
Yep.
You
don't know.
So...
And there's no shame. Like, I didn't know till I got here and investigated some cases. Like, you know, we don't know. You don't know till you know. Like I said, you don't know till you know.
Yeah.
So let's see. Okay. So if you want to go to the cases now, I have three cases that I brought.
Okay.
That are fairly more recent than some of the ones I've been talking about. And those last couple were just sort of examples of, like, we do get triangles near the border. We do, you know, get a lot of SpaceX all through the South and the Midwest sometime. So case number one, orbs or lights. I don't usually use the word orb. I just say a light because orb has so many connotations with it. You know, people take a picture at a cemetery on a windy day and they're like, orbs are everywhere. And it's like, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It's just dust and a flash. But so this one is the TP Mountains again. And they, you know, it's a lot of activity out there. There's definitely stuff that people don't know what it is. On August 8th, let's see, is this the one? Okay, hold on. Let me see. It's sitting in the back porch. Okay, so I'm right. Okay. So August 8th, 2023, around 9:30 p.m., but the witness watched it for hours and hours. And I want to share this one only because we get a lot of reports in Oklahoma. Now, they watched like 10 of these go by, and then they went in and got their phone, and then they filmed it on, you can see they added the effect, you know, to get, so this is 45 minutes of video in like a minute.
Okay.
And I will say, if you're out there and you're recording something, record it regular. Don't do the time lapse, although this is cool, but it makes it harder for me to figure out, or anybody. I didn't investigate this case again. Like, I don't know. It could be bugs. I mean, it could be bugs and a light from the porch. I'm not sure, but this person, sits out on this porch at night watching the mountains, you know, hanging out in the evening. And they say this does not happen all the time, and that this was happened on two. They sent two videos. I'm just sharing one because the other one's pretty much identical. And they set them both up with time lapse for 45 minutes. So I'm not sure what this is, and there are military bases around, and they go into, you know, and one of them kind of at one point seems to go off into the distance and make a left. They're calling them orbs. I don't know. It's a light. It's really hard. Like, what is that? And why are they all in that one area? Like, why am I not seeing them go all the way across the sky? If it's illuminated, you should see it continue traveling.
Yeah, like that one right there, which is, I think, obviously a plane or something along those
lines. Yeah, one of them. And some are planes, but that's not the actual airplane activity in that area, what we're seeing.
Yeah, no.
There's just in these, there's
that's
not that
an airplane
planes.
That just went across.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you can see that. You can see the difference. And I do wish that it wasn't on time lapse, because it's, what do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, you definitely start off with the helicopter that's there at the beginning that goes, stops and goes again. From the right to the left with the red beacon light on it.
Birds?
As far as what is moving and going across, that's interesting. Because now, granted, it is in an isolated spot in the sky.
Yeah.
Over 45 minutes. It could well be, I would think maybe it could be a meteor shower. Something along those lines.
You know what I thought at first is I thought it was light on a spider web.
They can go all kinds of directions. Meteor showers. Like they can go left, they can go up, they can go down. All kinds of things. So, I don't know that they would, that would.
Usually you can see the meteor though, clear the whole sky. It doesn't just show up.
I could see how you could say light off a spider web.
Right.
I could see how you could say that.
But it's hard to tell because of the time lapse.
Now, if they were outside, it's very hard to tell because of the time lapse. Now, granted, what did they record it with?
It was a Galaxy phone.
It was a Galaxy phone? This was on some sort of tripod then.
Yeah. He brought it out and put it on a tripod.
Okay.
He said he saw about 10 of them and he couldn't figure out what they were. So he decided to go get the Galaxy, hook it up, or it's leaning in a window. I couldn't tell you, but it's obviously stationary, and he's just recording. He just let it go while he was sitting on the porch, watching the sky and hanging out outside.
Yeah. I would be interested to, because I would be very interested to do some kind of Uber time lapse where you can really see an extended trail of these and see how they overlap to see if it makes a spider web.
Yeah, I don't know, but we do get reports like this in Oklahoma of multiple lights at different altitudes. People will say moving. And they don't know what they, you know, and I don't know if this is what they're seeing, but a lot of them don't have video or photos. And so if you are out there in Oklahoma and you're seeing something like this and you can film it, like send it in, because what are these things if they're out there? And sure, it could just be spider webs on the porch. I don't know. Film it regular, though. Don't film it in time lapse.
Yeah.
We'll get it. We'll send you a Dropbox link. We'll send you something where you can get us the whole 45-minute video without time lapsing it. But, I mean, it's curious. I'm curious about it. I would like to know more. It's not a transponding aircraft. I'm not sure. You know, and I've watched Skinwalker Ranch, too. I've literally seen, what's his name? Travis, is that his name? There was something went across the camera and they said, oh, it's going 38,000 miles an hour. That's a UFO. Yeah. Oh my God. And then like when you watch the bonus footage at the end of the season, he says, oh, we realized that was a bug.
Yeah.
So it can fool even, you know what I mean? Like it can fool.
Absolutely.
Even the best investigators could be fooled. And sometimes you have to go back and look at it and do more research to realize, oh, it wasn't going 38,000 miles an hour. It was a bug. So I don't know, because it's weird to me that it's in just that one area that they appear and disappear.
And right here, you can see once again where they are intersecting and crossing each other in that kind of way, which would be like the center of the web if it were going back and forth.
Like that a porch light's shining on a web. I would feel like a man would know that it's a spider web, but I don't know. Maybe he's hoaxing. I don't, you know.
Well, granted.
And you can see the sky moving. Look at the stars moving.
Yes, you can. You can see the sun rising.
Yeah.
As that's happening. But that's what I would say is that, number one, that is some extreme time lapse for 45 minutes. That seems like it would be a lot of star motion.
This might be the 4 hour one too. He did one for 4 hours. I just didn't want to. It's already hard enough for me to send you all the videos that I want to send you.
Well, at that point, honestly, I would say at that point, if it's 4 hours, time lapsed into 33 seconds. As I'm showing right here. But I mean, 33 seconds. 33 seconds is not an awful lot. All right.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of foot. If it was by itself, it would be a volume. You know,
that's the thing I'm wondering is time lapse, it's grabbing images. Yeah, it's grabbing images. It's not filming the whole thing continuously. It's like shutter.
Oh, no. What this is literally the entire video crunched down to 33 seconds.
Oh, is it? See, I thought this
because
might be-
because otherwise you would not see if it were still frame. And this is just it, folks. If it were a time lapse that was built from a frame, you wouldn't see the line move.
Right, you'd that's see what him, I was wondering
you'd see
about
him pop
time
up,
lapse,
or you'd
though,
see it boop, it, boop, boop, in that kind of way. So this is much more a video that was taken for that amount of time and then exported to that speed. You see how you see it moving across smoothly?
Yeah.
That's how you know it was filmed in full duration and then slowed down, especially those planes that are moving where you see it go across. You know?
Yeah. That's what I need to learn more about is how time-lapse video works on a phone.
So that for me says much more along the lines of, yeah, you may very well be looking at air traffic.
Yeah.
And what you're looking at is the contrail being lit by the sun rising from behind the mountain. And you're seeing,
I didn't investigate
you're seeing the combined, because you know how planes, especially on takeoff, landing, things like how they have that short contrail that happens.
Yeah,
you know, seeing that in combination with the very specific angle of the sun coming up and refracting or reflecting off of the bottom of the plane toward you.
Yeah.
That would be what I would say we're looking at just by the time lapse nature of this, where it is a time crunched video, not necessarily time lapsed. It's a full length video that was crunched down to 33 seconds.
So it makes it harder to identify the flights, you know, when it's time lapsed too, to be able to identify. But they said there were not this many flights, that would have been in that view.
In a 4 hour time. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. It depends on where you are.
In a 4 hour chunk of time, that seems like an utterly average number of flights coming in and out of a busy airport.
I guess, but there's not a busy airport near him, so I'm not sure. You know what I mean? That's the problem. Is it
over the mountain range?
Who is what over the mountain range?
The airport.
No, there's. I mean, there's not an airport there. He's kind of near. I forget how many miles away, but they're like a lot of people. There's a military base. But I doubt
which typically has some sort of flight line.
Yeah, some sort of flight line.
So,
but yeah, it's interesting. So I don't know.
Which, you know, in and of itself would explain why they're isolated over a directed area.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. So. It's just hard. It's hard to say. And again, like I said, like don't time lapse it.
Don't alter the video.
So we
don't.
Can see real time.
That's just it. And that cannot be expressed more than enough. I will always give people the credit where credit is due with the fact of humans are humans. You guys shaking hands, things like that. We have software that can help. Okay, folks. Yeah. Zooming in doesn't help. It's bad enough that what's on your phone is not actually a camera. Let's start with that. Like I just saw a post from somebody the other day. Or actually it was today, because the Artemis mission just happened and just took a picture of Earth yesterday, as they left Earth orbit, you know, and people were like, how is it that 50 years later, the image doesn't look as clear as the one taken in 72. And it's like, well, because they aren't using an actual camera.
Yeah.
They are. They're using a digital camera, which is a series of sensors. It's not an actual lens going onto a piece of photo. They didn't get that picture in real time from from the camera on the side. They took a picture with a Hasselblad, like the best camera in the world, with one of the best lenses in the world, is what they took, that with the best film available at the time. You know, film made specifically for the missions. So, like, you want to know why it looks so much better? That's why. It's an actual picture taken with an actual camera. It's bad enough that our devices deceive us, CJ. But that is a prime example of what I will talk about with SoCal MUFON, and what I will be talking about at MUFON, the concept of what's called force perspective. Now, while you may not be making yourself look teeny tiny, up against a wicked big hand that's closer to the lens than you are, what you are doing is forcing the perspective by changing the time, by changing the time code of the video, by not providing time code of the video, by altering the video to begin with and presenting it as such.
And then you're going by somebody's...
You know, he told you that it was 4 hours of video put into that.
Well, there were two videos, so I'm not sure which one you were showing. One was 45 minutes, and then there was another one that was 4 hours. So I'm not sure. I can't remember which video I sent you.
Just by the motion, as a backyard astronomer right here, just by the active motion of these stars and how far they move, and not only that, but from here to here, sunrise wise, that seems much like four hours.
Yeah,
than 45
I think that's that might be the 4 hour one.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Those are a couple things to me that say much more 4 hours than 45 minutes. But either way, you're talking about presenting a video in a time lapse format that doesn't provide full data.
It just makes it too hard to investigate, and it makes it just hard for us to be able to call it.
And granted, you know, with more information, knowing, and I'm sure you looked into what direction he was facing and, you know, what was nearby, what was on the other side of the mountain range, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then, look, the FI that investigated it felt it was a UFO, and they couldn't identify it, or not a UFO meaning like ET, but they just couldn't identify it. It was not on the flight radar. But again, they're estimating based on a time-lapse video, so it just makes it hard.
Exactly. And that's, again, just the prime example of raw data, as raw as possible. You know?
Yeah, and we get a lot of reports like this in Oklahoma of these multiple lights moving in different directions and different heights, and I don't know if they're related or not, but if you see something like that, send it. Send the regular video so we can look into it further and see if there is something to this, or is it just... spiderwebs and airplanes. I don't know.
The spiderweb hypothesis is really good. I think is a solid possibility, especially over a 4 hour period. You know,
I just remember because I'm in California, right? So I lay in the sun, we go out there, and I remember just staring at a spiderweb over my head for a while once with my eyes kind of squinted and thinking, God, that looks like a UFO. I mean, I know it's a spider web, but I could film a video right now and probably report it to MUFON and might even get a UFO status on it. But I know it's a spider web, you know, like I, and that's what I'm always doing as an investigator is like when I see something that looks like a UFO and I can break it down, I'm like, I need to remember this because this could come up in the future, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And that's what we should all be doing. You know, that it's one of those allowing new data or a new way of thinking about something doesn't stop the phenomena from existing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's kind of like the whole Patterson-Gimlin debate going on right now with the documentary that's come out. And that's the fact that suit, no suit, faked film or no faked film, that doesn't dismiss the rest of the body of evidence for Sasquatch.
That's what I always tell people.
It's not the linchpin upon which Sasquatch exists or doesn't, is the Patterson-Gimlin film, you know? Your case that you don't report is not going to be what the world of UFO UAP research is linchpinned on, folks. So don't be scared by that fact. Don't be scared by the fact that your sighting may be solved. Now, if you're a dude that's out there recording things and presenting them as something else and reporting them, you know, maybe at least be a little bit scared of what karma might do to you, you know, because you are purposefully trying to deceive people and wasting the time of good investigators.
I mean, our investigators at MUFON, I mean, everyone that in our crew is like really passionate and cares. Yeah. And most everybody's seen something, not all of them, but have seen something. And they're legitimate. Like, I legitimate would like to know what's going on. I don't think I'm going to find out, but I'm here because I know what it's like to spend a lifetime. You know, I saw something when I was young, and my whole life I wondered what it was. And I just needed to be around other people who had seen something like what I had seen. You know, there's just no question. It wasn't a plane. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was a disc. I saw a classic disc like from 20 feet away. Like, what was that thing that I saw? What was that? And it was in like the mid 70s when there was a huge flap going on. And, you know, at the time, I didn't know that. I didn't know what a UFO was. I was a little kid being raised on a ranch. We had like 50 head of cattle and acres of oranges. We were in Southern California. My family's like Catholic. They didn't talk about UFOs. They didn't. My family was not into crystals and UFOs and that kind of, like, not at all. So, you know, I said I saw a translucent metal cloud. That's what I thought. I didn't even have the word UFO in my lexicon at that age. I was like seven, and it just wasn't what, you know. So I was like, I saw a see-through. I didn't say translucent. I said see-through metal cloud. Later I added translucent because it makes more sense. But I saw a metal cloud that I could see through.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway. So you want to go to case two?
Yes.
Okay. And I don't know when we started exactly. I didn't look
That's
at the
all right. class, so I got a timer in front of me. I'll let you know.
Okay. Then I worry that I'm going to like run out of stuff to talk about.
And you won't.
Like, twiddling thumbs. Okay. So case number two, this is a case that made the news. So especially in Oklahoma, you might have seen it on the local news broadcast. This is January 24th, 2025. It's around 8 p.m. The witness and his wife are going out to get some ice cream. I've heard the name of the place, a famous ice cream place in Oklahoma City. When they step outside their front door, they see this object. And you can go ahead and play that video that I call the kite.
Okay, let me find that real quick.
Yeah, that's okay. It says case. Oh, yeah, because the files that I was transferring you to.
Yes, exactly.
Right. But so look for the original video that was submitted. I mean, I don't mean to blow
There it is right here.
Yeah. So let's look at that. So he and his wife step outside. And it's just there, and it's moving back and forth. So he films this. And then he goes, he's a drone operator. So he also goes inside and gets a drone. You can hear the wind, right? You can hear the wind. Yeah. It's windy.
Ooh. Wow. Right. Wow.
Yeah. Some big movement, right?
Yep. That is really wild.
It is really wild. And then, you know, after a certain point, he's like, screw this cell phone. I'm going to get my drone. And he's a teacher. I think he teaches high school. Really nice guy. I actually have started talking to him in email, and we're going to hook up on the phone. He wants to take me to lunch. He wants me to come to Oklahoma for lunch. Maybe I'll come to Oklahoma for lunch.
Right.
But isn't that interesting? And it's so glowy orange.
That is really fascinating.
It's so fascinating. It's so super fascinating.
And once again, the dip dive that this thing does in a second is
it's
marvelous.
A pretty big. It's dip dive.
I would say drone. Sure. I could go that route, but there is quite a range that this thing covers rapidly.
Yes, it does take a major dive at a certain point. Now, one of the photos I sent you, I believe it's a square. I know I sent you some different shape photos. Is his drone? His drone has a photo camera, and he takes some photos of it close up.
Yeah.
So if you can show that, that might lend another perspective on this object, because he does get up closer to it. Now, his estimation, based on how high he got his drone, he's guessing this object is 1,500 to 2,000 feet up. Pretty high. That's what his drone took. And I don't, can you zoom in on the object at the bottom, the lit up, the taquito, whatever you want to call that? Yeah, look at that. Look at that. And
that is wild.
That's a little weird, right? You can see how it got on the news. You can see how it got on the news. They had professionals analyzing it, all sorts of people analyzing it. The FI ruled out aircraft, obviously, could not identify the object.
Now,
what do you think?
I would say, especially that there, lends me very particularly to like a halogen lens, like a searchlight lens. Something like that. What this is, I'm not sure.
But let me tell you what I found when I did a little digging. I was not the field investigator on the case. Let me see if the information I give you lends anything to what you're saying. So January 24th, right? What's January 24th? Lunar New Year that year. And what? Okay. So let me, I'm going to just start at the top of my notes here. So I did a little digging. Now, I grew up in San Diego flying kites. We would tie a kite to the trunk of the car and it would fly all day long, doing a similar thing to what that is, right? Sure. 2000 feet. Mm. I did some research. So, okay, let me see. The highest kite flown on record is 16,000 feet. Although not the average novice, a professional kite flyer, someone who's really, really excited about it, 1,500 to 2,000 feet is not that difficult, not that hard. They have the equipment. They have the kites that'll do that.
Sure.
So it was the year of the snake, right? So if I was flying, and what you do for the Lunar New Year is you put the kite up in the air and it's supposed to be sending all the bad luck away from you.
Yeah.
And since it's the year of the snake, I would have tied a lot of colorful strings to the end of my kite to let those flow and be to be the snakes. Now, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, right? I'm not saying this is what it is. I'm just saying, could those be, because he said a kite tail hangs down. And I said, yes, but not all kites have tails.
Oh,
and
they don't hang down when they're in the air.
Right. And when the wind's blowing in, and it's 12 miles an hour, and that's ideal kite flying weather, right? So they go outside, they see it. They go get their ice cream. They drive around, they're looking at it. They come home, it's still there. They watch TV. They look at midnight. It's still there. He goes to bed, falls asleep, wakes up at 2 a.m., is thinking about this object. He looks and it's gone. It's gone by 2 a.m. So my thought was it could easily. So then I did some more reaching, and there's like a YouTube channel called Kite TV that operates out of Oklahoma City. And these guys are major kite enthusiasts.
Any
right?
night flights?
Well, look at the other pictures. One of the pictures I sent you, you can see a night kite, like a glowing night kite. And their object. Now that's just one you can buy. That's a $400 night kite you can just buy. But you can also obviously make them on your own, and they can be, and look at the colorful kite I sent you. I sent you a picture of a colorful kite that's a little more like that shape. Like, let's say that was white and lit up, might look similar. I mean, I'm just, you know what I mean? I'm always looking like, what's the prosaic answer here? Could this be a kite? And look, when you zoom in on that, you can see almost looks like a string coming down in front of it. Look in front of it. Like, look there. Could that be the string, which would really be like a pretty thick rope for a kite this big going to 2,000 feet? And then he said, well, my neighborhood's full of trees. There's nowhere to fly it. But, you know, it doesn't mean there's not a high school football field or you're not at the roof of your apartment complex flying a kite. Someone could do it if that was really what they were into. So, you know, and then he said it was gone by 2 a.m., which made me think that might be when the party ended. The Lunar New Year party ended at like 1 in the morning, and they brought the kite down and they put it away. Maybe, I don't know, but I just I can't rule out a kite. I can't rule out the night kite. I can't rule out the glowing night kite. I really don't know what this is. And a lot of experts have looked at this video and say, we can't identify it. A kite is not going to transpond. We're not going to know.
No. And when you're talking about that dip move, especially the things like this, like when you, there are some pretty acrobatic kites out there, man. There's some really magnificent things you can do with kites.
Yeah, and look, and when it's 12 miles an hour, the wind that we're looking at is the first like 33 feet above the earth. It doesn't account for wind gusts that could occur at 2,000 feet, if it is at 2,000 feet or 1,500 feet. So I'm not an expert. I haven't flown a kite since I was a kid, but I did just feel like it's just moving like a kite. It's just moving like a kite to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah. And he was definitely outside. He's not inside. So it's not a reflection off of anything.
No. You can tell. And you can hear the wind on the camera. You can hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can hear the gust.
I mean, unless he's out in a. Out in a car or a truck or something and just has the windows open on a breezy night.
It was like 12 miles an hour wind roughly at that time, which could mean a gust of 16 or 18 miles. It doesn't mean it was consistently 12 miles, but
yeah,
per hour.
That but means it peaked.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
And a lot of you, if you're in Oklahoma and you're watching this, you might've seen this on the news last year. It was on the news.
Yeah. This is a pretty wild one. CJ.
Right. It's interesting. I like the ones that make you think and make you do all this research. Like, and that's the other thing is now, and that made me wonder too about that triangle we looked at the beginning too. Like, could that have been a kite? I don't know.
Yeah. And
but you can,
that would have been an awfully big kite, I think.
Yeah. Right. I just don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Not an expert, but I can't rule out a kite. Can't rule it completely out on the information in this one case.
At least the fact that, those kites exist, that stuff's there, is something hugely important to consider and to take into the data set with things like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't he had done a lot of investigating this guy. He's really into it. Like, I want him to be a field investigator for MUFON because he's so into it. And AI said it, that a kite couldn't fly that high and this and that. And the thing is, you guys, you can't trust AI. Like,
no.
When you know how AI works the best is when a human is curating the information coming in and going out of the AI and making adjustments. That's when AI works, is when it's working with the human. You can't just punch some information into AI and say, oh, AI said this is a UFO, or it doesn't work that way, because AI is not thinking, oh, this could be a kite, or you have to use your human intelligence and add to the information and bring up all the different points, he had never
what most people forget about AI is that their AI is not isolated. Their AI is using the same exact IP address as their computer and their browser. So unless you're VPNing everything and deleting all cookies, deleting all browsing, and your AI has no access to any of that or your search history or anything. That's how AI actively predicts and gives you answers that you want to hear. Is it's actually seen your browser history and it knows what you look at, and it compares that to the data that it pulls off the internet, whether it's good, clean data or crap water data. It combines both of them and gives you out of that what you want to hear. So,
yeah, it's hard to say. Like, AI didn't tell him that, hey, this is Lunar New Year, and so the surrounding week in Oklahoma City celebrated Lunar New Year, the year of the snake, with several events, key activities, including celebrations at Marriott Botanical Gardens on Saturday the 25th, lions dancing, community gatherings in the Asian district. Like, he didn't know any of that stuff. And then I asked, because I don't celebrate Lunar New Year. That's not what I normally celebrate. And I asked, you know, the Google, like, do you fly a kite for Lunar New Year? And it says, yes, people fly kites for Lunar New Year, particularly in Korea and China. It's traditionally an activity to welcome the spring and banish bad luck. The tradition is often observed during the 2-week festival. So for, if you're a Chinese family in America that lives in Oklahoma or Korea, or you're a Korean, or you're just like into the kites, you know, like, and you know that this is the time to do it. It involves sending bad luck up into the sky. And in some cases, they cut the string and let the bad luck just fly away.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know what that was. Maybe a kite.
Yeah.
I just don't think an alien's going to be just swooping around in the air, like not going anywhere. But I don't know.
Well, that brings up huge points of logic, CJ, yeah. That I think all too many people are willing to let go. You know, which is no, you know, they are, you know, why travel millions of miles just to leave the lights on, you know, things like that, you know, why?
Yeah. What would they be doing? What would the purpose of that?
What is the motivation?
What's the motivation of that flight pattern? If it is an extraterrestrial craft or an interdimensional, why that flight pattern? What are they? So I don't know. So I got one last case from for you.
Let's do it real quick. Let's do it.
Okay, good. Case 3, and it'll be quick. It's a cattle mutilation. I just thought I'd bring one because, you know, we're in Oklahoma and they have them. So cattle mutilation, show a generic picture of a cattle mutilation because this case did not
have a little graphic here, folks, just so you know. Yeah, this is out of Oregon.
But that's what... Okay, that's out of Oregon. So yeah, so cattle, pretty classic case. The cow was there in the morning eating with all the rest of the cows. She observed 8 of her cattle were present. They appeared healthy and fit when they were feeding in the morning. When they came to eat the next morning, that cow was missing. The one cat, not the cow from that photo, but a cow was missing. So she walks the property to look for it. She finds it dead. Walks the property, finds it dead, located the missing cow. It was deceased. It had injuries to the face and the mouth area and the rectum. Witness reported it to the Cotton County Sheriff's Department. They arrived. They didn't take a report. And that's when the witness reached out to MUFON, and MUFON sent field investigators who took samples and sent it to our lab. So the cow was roughly 6 to 700 pounds, missing an eye and the eyeball, the tissue around the eye and the eyeball significantly. Let's see, the right side of the cow's jaw had a large piece of hide and muscle tissue removed, exposing the jaw. The fact that the cow's entire tongue had been removed, substantial injury to the rectum. It appeared as if an instrument had completely cored out the rectum. Like, what?
Wow.
Noticeable lack of blood on the ground. They took the samples, reported it to the lab. The MUFON lab said that it showed signs of laser cutting and surgical laser cutting. I'm not sure how the lab knows that. I don't work in the lab, but there's a lot of pretty smart people in the lab, pretty good people. So it was inconclusive. Obviously, we don't know what it is, but it did show evidence of laser cutting. The case was closed. Obviously, it could be reopened again at some point. But we don't know what these cattle mutilations are. We don't know what they are. We don't know where they come from. But you can report that as well to MUFON.
Well, and, you know, I've got one up here from Etoka County, Oklahoma, or I guess it was the Comanche County Sheriff's Department. That said that the criminals cut out the cow's uterus, milk bag, and right ear. And it's fascinating. We've had mutilations here in Texas within the last 2 years. We've had no less than 2 cases that I know of. I think 3 popped up on radar. I didn't hear much about the second one. A friend of mine actually sent me pictures because it happened right down the road from him. And he had sent me some pictures from a local rancher.
It's been going on forever.
That were very, very graphic.
And not just cows. It can be deer. Yeah. It can be elk. It can be moose.
We had Ken Gerhardt on talking about it. And not that we have any answers, things like that. But one of the things that I have posited, and you would... the precision with which some of these things happen is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The fact that, yes... lasers, and they can tell typically laser by the heat at which things were cauterized.
Yeah, it's cauterizing.
So
and that's why there's no blood. That's why there's not pools of blood.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact that these what would typically be associated with what's known as sweetmeats, in certain cultures, the you know,
I'm all for the sweet milk, meats. I'm the, all for
the
milk, I love
the uterus, the cheek meat,
yeah.
Things yeah. like that. It's weird. And I was like, you know, is there some sort of, I don't know, like cult selling that on the rarefied meat market, you know, something like that.
But then they're like in every state, they're all over the place doing this, and they've been doing it forever, and they're doing it at, like, are you going to go hunt a moose in a national park and do this, like, for your cult? Like, that's,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I couldn't tell you.
It's one that I've wanted Linda Moulton Howe on the show for years to discuss it, because she's really the OG when it comes to that topic. And
for sure,
it's definitely a strange one. And it's one that has been, as you said, persistent. It has been out there. It's been out there for a while. We still don't have answers. And all of a couple of years ago in Covington, Kentucky, they had David Paulides come and speak about his 411 series, his missing 411, and specifically about the UFO connection.
The UFO connection and the Hunted are my two favorite ones.
It was pretty fascinating to see the connections with food supply, cattle, things like that, that were going on with that. So look into that,
and
folks.
Talking
it's very interesting.
What's that, that wasting disease and the deer and all, I mean, but you know,
yeah,
go watch his movies. They're free all over the place and they're fascinating. And,
absolutely.
You know, if you're in Oklahoma and you're watching this and you want to get involved or become a member or anything, you can email me. I have a few, like I have southwestmufon@gmail.com. I have mufoncj@gmail.com. I check them daily. Shoot me an email. I'm managing the Oklahoma MUFON Facebook page. Please give us a like and a shout out. Follow us on Facebook, all that stuff. And if you're in Oklahoma, we need you. We need more active members, and we want to get some meetings going, and we need more field investigators and everything. Come and join us.
Absolutely. Thank you as always for coming on. It's always a pleasure chatting with you.
Talking to you, buddy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't wait to see what you do with the position, to see how things work out for you. Congratulations on so many fronts with that.
Thank you. Yeah. I just want to help. I just like to organize and help. And that's what I just want to help.
Exactly. So hold the line real quick while we close things out for this segment. While you are online, everybody, checking out MUFON, filing a report, becoming a member, become a member so that you can become a field investigator, everybody. Make sure to stop on by MUFON Symposium. MUFON Symposium is coming up in August, the end of August in Covington, Kentucky. You can find your tickets at MUFONsymposium.com. I will be speaking there. Peter Robbins will be there. Stacy Wright, Alex Dietrich, Class Swan, all kinds of folks will be there speaking this year. Richard Beckwith, so many. Stop on by, check that out. MUFONsymposium.com is where you can find out more information. When we come back from this quick commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by our good friend David Tran. We will be talking about the topic of training psi abilities right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much for staying through that with us. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. If you are a fan of CBD products like I am, stop on by True Hemp Science today. TrueHempScience.com is the website where you can find amazing products made by Christopher Lynch. Some great stuff. Everything there is made through a spigyric process where every part of the plant is used, reused, combusted, and reused. That's every part, man. I mean, the seeds, the stems, the buds, the fiber, the leaves, every single part goes through that literal alchemical process until an amazing spigyric product complete with terpene profiles and all is the result. Stop on by TrueHempScience.com today. Check them out. Check out the terpene profiles that work for you. I cannot express to you how important terpenes are to the cannabinoid family and to your cannabinoid system, folks. Check their stuff out. It's literally some of the best stuff that I've ever found in any dispensary, and it's made right here in Texas. So check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. 7% is what you will save with the code CURIOUS7, that's 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more, and get two edibles on the way out the door. Our guest in this segment is the amazing David Tran. He was one of the perceptualists at this last year's Psy Games, the inaugural Psy Games that happened in North Carolina. It was Virginia. It was absolutely incredible. It was an amazing weekend to witness, and I just got a chance to spend another weekend with David right here in Austin at the Psy Games Intensive, doing psychokinesis training. And I have been to remote viewing camps. I've been to all kinds of stuff. David, welcome to the show, to your first episode. How are you today, bud?
Chris Jordan, man. Feel like this is how it feels to hit the big times, dude. I feel amazing. Times. I'm so blessed to be here. This is definitely the big times for me.
I am excited to have you here because this last weekend at the Psy Games retreat that just happened here in Austin at the Ancient Yoga Center was really incredible, man. I saw everybody learn something. And even the time that we spent together talking, getting to know each other on a deeper level, I was fascinated to find out your journey with things and where you came from with the world of Psy and how you've just begun your own Psy training, just since Psy Games, stuff like that. It's not like you went to 85 camps before that and took classes from so-and-so, that kind of stuff. You were somebody who came by these skills fully and naturally. And that's something that we talk about on this show with guests like Lynn Buchanan. Whenever we talk about remote viewing, whenever we talk about any of these abilities, it's the fact of there are people who play basketball and then there are Michael Jordan, David. You know, and it's not that Michael Jordan didn't practice every day. It's not that he didn't work every day. It's not that he doesn't still play every day now. It's the fact of he naturally had a skill set that was different with a basketball than the average person who picks up a basketball. You know, that person with the basketball can still learn to be trained to shoot like Michael Jordan. You take enough camps, you spend enough time, you can get there and you can train your body and your mind to do it. You already had that natural discipline. You already had that natural means to do this. How did you come to discover that? How old were you when you realized that there was something different let's say. I'm not going to say off. I'm not going to say strange or weird or even extraordinarily, but different about what you could do with this and that you had a different connection with the world around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even before I dive into that, I think for our viewers, everybody who's listening, if you don't remember a thing from this podcast, just remember that we all have this ability. We all have these gifts. And I love your analogy about basketball, because at the end of the day, anyone can pick up a basketball, dribble, and shoot. You might miss, but also you might make it. But also, you're going to miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And so the biggest unlock for all of these psi abilities is you got to delete all of those self-limiting beliefs. And you got to just try it out for yourself, you know, even for the skeptics, right? The thing is, if you don't believe it, stay open-minded and find out for yourself. And you might find that you would be surprised by what you can do.
Yeah.
And just going back to what you've asked me, you know, I've said this before, but psi abilities or having these extra sensory capabilities has been something that I've always known that I had. You know, it's something that I was born with. Luckily, my parents, my mom especially, never was someone to tell me that I couldn't do a thing. And so for me, being able to drop into my intuition and feel a sense of change, or maybe I'm feeling that someone is sad and I just pick up a phone call or a phone to call them to check in on them. Like those feelings have never left. And to me, it's just as if it's a sense of like smell or taste or touch. You can imagine people who are like colorblind, for example, right? Like they've gone through their entire life not having that sense. And so when they're talking to someone who is not colorblind, it's sort of like that feeling, you know, like a colorblind person asking a normal person, how is it that you're able to see in color? And so when people are asking me, how is it that you can sense and feel things or do the things that you do? That's sort of the feeling that I have inside as well. Like, you know, it's an innate thing that I've never lost. But if I think about my childhood, you know, way back in the day, TVs aren't they're not flat monitor TVs like we have today, LCDs, big giant tubes. And I remember as a kid just walking by and TV would crackle, or, you know, those radios with the big old antennas, I'd walk by and, you know, like whatever was playing would just stop. And oftentimes I found myself just breaking things. And, you know, you being a kid, just like, oh man, what did I do? And just over time, it's now connecting and thinking back to those memories. That was how I experienced it. It was just very natural for me. But also if I think about like special things like, precognition. So my family, we are refugees coming from Vietnam. Back in the '80s, that was a big thing, like the boat people, right? Following the Vietnam War. If you fought alongside with the United States or you're from the South, you know, you had to flee. The communists would take over everything, and whatever they couldn't take, they would burn. But anyhow, I do recall making that journey at a very young age, 3. We left Vietnam and my family and I, we ended up in a refugee camp. And I recall in those moments, you know, there would be nights where my mom would put me to sleep and she would go off and do her thing. And I'd wake up, look around, and I don't know where she is, but just closing my eyes, I had a sense and knowing where she was, and I would just find her. And that ability just kind of like stayed with me my entire life. As a child, I roamed a lot by myself. You know, I'd get out of school early just even as a young kid, get dropped off, getting out of the bus, and I would just wander off by myself. And I'd get lost. But yet, when I knew that it was time to go home, I would know how to get home. And I just remember this one time in Savannah, Georgia. Came home from school early. They dropped me off at my auntie's house. She wasn't home. And I thought to myself, well, I don't want to just sit here on the porch and wait for her. So I went off on an adventure. And I somehow got lost in the neighborhood and found my way to my mom's friend's house. I just felt like I needed to go there. And I knew that it would be a safe place for me. And so the entire day, my entire family was looking for me, thought I was kidnapped or lost or something, and they were just freaking out. Come to find out that like they found me at the friend's house, and parents were like, where have you been this entire time? They were just freaking out.
Right here.
Right here, just waiting for you guys. Where have you been? What took you guys so long? You know?
Yeah.
And I think over time, there have been points in my life where the sense of like precognition was so strong. I remember I was in college and I was sitting in class and I just had the sense that something was going on with a friend's house. Like I had the sense that somebody's house was getting burglarized. I got out of class. I called all of my friends and I say, hey, are you guys okay? And everybody said, no, we're fine. Later on that evening, my friend called me back and he said, how did you know? I said, what are you talking about? Like, my house got robbed today. And it was just mind-blowing. And it's just one of those things where you kind of sense the future, you know what's happening, but also because of circumstances, there's not a whole lot that you can do. Mm. And so those are just some of the experiences that I've had throughout my lifetime that kind of goes back to like being moments that really stuck out in my mind as having precognitive abilities.
Well, and, you know, with those in mind, David, you mentioned something a while ago, which is the fact of it's just like any other sense. And the first thing that popped into my mind, especially whenever you mentioned someone who's colorblind, is the idea of how the average person, even doesn't matter, normally sighted, normal hearing, everything else, normal feeling, normal touch, has these abilities that we're talking about, but doesn't know how to quantify them or what they are. We all have these moments. We all have that moment where something doesn't sit well. Those kind of things. Those were things that I used to teach my seventh to seniors in high school. Whenever I taught religion and spirituality in CCE, I would teach them a concept of the kite string. One day you will walk into a room or into a situation or into a location where you feel like a kite string is being pulled on the back of your belly button. Doesn't matter what the situation is, perk up and pay attention. It could be something good. It could be something bad, but something's about to happen. And whatever feeling you have immediately, listen to that. Like if that feeling is, I don't need to be here, turn around and walk out. And whatever friends don't leave you or leave with you or try to keep you from leaving, they may not be your friend, you know, but okay. do not disobey that. There's something there. There's something intrinsically there that you need to follow and that you need to follow that compulsion.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's a gift within all of us. I just find it funny because here, you know, the Western culture, we intuitively know it. Just think about that word. We know that there is intuition. And so we give these things, these labels that kind of sterilize these intuition feelings, you know? Yeah. So for example, like, I have a gut feeling about a thing. Well, what is driving that gut feeling? And we're really just using that as a metaphor to say, I have a sixth sense about something.
Yep.
But we're able to rationalize it because, oh, okay, well, it's just a gut feeling. Or think about the placebo effect, right? The sheer fact that someone can give you a sugar pill you'll take it.
Yep.
And because you believe that it'll heal you, you heal yourself. And it's a known thing, and we sterilize it by giving it a, you know, a label that is mm-hmm. rational and yep. logical. But yet we're missing the point. There is something beyond just what the rational mind can comprehend. There is something beyond what we're told about our bodies and our minds and this heart to mind connection that can influence our bodies and our realities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just it, is the idea of, and I'm going to bring this up from the quote from the internet here, is this picture of, you know, normal vision versus color blindness. So one of the people that we had the pleasure of interviewing a couple few years ago at the Remote Viewing Association conference, at the IRVA conference in Virginia, was Maureen Seberg, the author of Fearful and Wonderfully Made. She is a tetrachromic. So,
well, what is that?
As opposed to somebody like who has an aberration in their chroma where they don't see green and red right, she's a tetrachromic. So she sees red, green, blue, and yellow.
Whoa.
She sees four parts of the spectrum with the rods in her eyes. So she sees like a parrot. So she sees like literally a million different shades of the same colors that we see.
It's amazing.
It's absolutely phenomenal. And when you think about that, when you, and even just to consider that, I just got a chill thinking about it. And that's the idea of, ask a normal sighted person what green is, to describe green. And that, and I think that this is a great way to kind of describe what you're talking about, that idea of, we know something, but to be able to put words on it, to be able to describe it, is different, you know, with PK and with these abilities. And it's very much the idea of, describe green. If you have met a blind person and they've asked you, describe the color green to me, how do you describe that? Using the rest of the senses and not vocabulary that requires eyes to be familiar with.
And that's the point. So I love it. You're hitting on something so critical, right? Because, you know, this person, or just like people who are colorblind, because they have yet to experience it, it's not in their framework of reality, is not in their mental model of what could be. But just because it's not experienced, like they haven't experienced it themselves, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
That's right.
Right? So for folks who are highly in tune with, you know, their innate abilities beyond the five core senses, they talk about five, but science tells us there's, what, 20 some odd senses.
Yeah.
Outside of that, you know, so on top of that, what if there were more than 22? What if, I'll just make up a number, there were 35, but we either have yet to develop the faculties to understand them, or maybe, just maybe, we have the faculties and they have now since atrophied. Right. Yeah. The other consideration is the world that we're living in, or the world that we perceive, is really just an illusion. There is stimuli all the time in the air. We're swimming in a soup of data. Right? I forget the actual count, but maybe there's like 20 million bits of information at any given time. But your brain downsamples all of that.
Yeah.
Right? It takes only a small chunk of all that data, and it allows you to not go insane from all that data. It allows you to comprehend your reality in real time, because or else it's system overload, right? Like basically a DDoS on your brain if you were to take in all that stimuli at once. Yeah. But so I think about psychic ability, and I think about extrasensory perception as just being able to first acknowledge that we're swimming in a soup of data, to having the faculties like a satellite dish to capture that. Three, having the social software to, for example, understand that the vibrations that are coming out of my throat right now that are being perceived by you is something called English. But then guess what? Once you hear that, you got to interpret what I'm saying. And so you're having to make up your reality in real time. And then, oh, by the way, all the lights that's coming through, bouncing to your eyes, your brain is taking that and now reprojecting and assimilating the synthesis of stimuli to create reality. But what if you're able to just tap into just a little bit more than the next person? See a broader spectrum of colors in the next person? Hear some wavelengths that other people can't hear? And then now your brain is kind of adding that in together to give you a more clearer picture of reality. And so what if psychic abilities was nothing more than just additional fidelity in data? That's where my mind goes.
Sure, sure. And you know, you especially be doing the analysis work that you do, things like that regularly. I think it's very interesting to hear you talk about especially psiability and what this means, what it means for you personally, as opposed to a lot of people who I have met who come at things very much from the world of mediumship and connection in that realm, you know, or even yogic work, Reiki, that kind of stuff, which, you know, we went into and we'll be going into with Kim DeRosiers. She'll be coming on the show to talk about moving subtle energies and Reiki and things like that. And people don't realize that, like, that is a form of PK, like bio PK in that kind of way, being able to heal by touch. Like, people, this was spoken about in the Bible. This was spoken about, like, by numerous cultures, the idea of being able to lay hands on and heal people. Lay hands on and change energetic fields, even feeling when energy leaves you because somebody touched you in a crowd. You know, these are all PK things that are spoken of in a religious aspect.
Totally. Know? I mean, okay. I think PK, people get, they think of PK and immediately they go to like bending spoons.
Yes.
But if we take a core,
but here's
the
thing.
So cool, you bent it right now.
Here's the thing: I bent this spoon on the Irva cruise, and this is a beef spoon. All right, David. And I was impressed with myself when I did this. I was pretty healthy. That was about 2 years ago. Like I told you at the conference, my hands have gone bad. My silverware this Holy last moly. Weekend was far different. In being able to bend that. And there's no way with my carpal and cubital tunnel that I have right now that I would be able to just bend that without screaming in pain. So the fact that I was able to bend that, not just bend it, but bend it with ease, like twist it, yeah, like it was a straw, like a bendy straw. That's wild. And I'm a pretty meditative dude, things like that. But the idea of once again, releasing and getting past what is impossible.
Totally. And so, you know, bending spoons is great because it's instant gratification.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of living in a materialistic society in terms of like science, right? It's hard science right now. So when you hold a spoon, and it goes, I go back to my analytics and research route, but you know, when you bend a spoon without just thought prep connection, you can sense how hard it is, especially when the spoon is thick. And then you go ahead and you apply breath work, you apply intention, and you apply your energetics to send your energy into the spoon, and you'll notice that it's much more pliable. And it's instant gratification for your intellectual mind. And so you could say, yes, PK. And then that's why a lot of folks think about spoon bending or stuff like that to affect the material world. But then if we if we really take a look or a deep dive at the definition of PK or psychokinesis, is really just about affecting the material world with thought. So what if we thought about this? Imagine all of the great actors and actresses out there who, just by recalling a memory, can use their mind to affect their body to produce tears.
Yeah.
Cry on the spot. Is that not some flavor of PK? If you think about it, if we're going by the pure definition of
bio-PK, absolutely.
Matter. Or when we talk about, you know, some exciting event that had happened to us, we start getting goosebumps.
Yep.
And literally your body is vibrating. That's the source of all of these. I mean, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, all of the modalities, whether it's PK, MindSight, Precog, dowsing, telepathy, all of that really comes from this core sense of like being centered, tapping into your energetics, feeling it, and then believing it. And that's where the magic happens.
The believing it, I think, is where the magic happens most, David, because
you got to believe it.
And that's just it. You can't believe that it might be. You can't believe that it's possible. You have to believe it as though it's already happened, as though this is like already a fact written in stone that this has occurred already. And I think that that's a hard level for a lot of average people to get to. That I think that speaks, but almost the same to the same crowd that would walk into a church, that not every single person that walks into the church connects to the divine in that kind of way. I think most people are going through things in a very rote habit kind of way, and it's the same way in life. We may get these impressions, we get these feelings, we get these things all the time. The difference is whether or not we give them credence, you know, no different than you're driving down the road listening to your favorite radio station. And as you hit the same exit every day, you'll hear a wobble from another station come through. The only difference is whether or not you choose to tune into the other station that's popping up.
Absolutely.
You know, it's there. It's right there next to you. Did you decide to actively shift one day and check out what it was about? You know, it's happening. It's there. It's crossing frequencies with yours as we speak. You know?
Totally. And I think that's the difference with those who are in tune with their innate ability versus those who are not. Those who are not just recognize that the radio frequency has changed and the song that they were listening to is no longer playing. While the person who's in tune realizes, hey, I can just shift the knob a little bit and go back to that frequency where I once was.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Yeah. Now going, especially because like we said in the beginning, you were a natural with these things. This was something that you have had and realized you had since you were very young. And it was never discouraged away from you. You were never told that you were crazy. You were never told that you shouldn't do or pursue such things because of religious basis or anything like that. So I think that I think that you have a very unique perspective when it comes to, I think, growing up with the idea that these things are possible, as opposed to many people who maybe find their way to these disciplines in their 30s, you know, something like that, after the world has crushed them, David. And they maybe think that these things aren't possible, but they start exploring it. They hear about it on a show. They hear about it on telepathy tapes. They see the ad for Psygames run across and they're like, huh, that's interesting. I've thought about it before. I read the Time Life series, but I don't know if that's for me. I don't know if I can do that. How do you onboard them? How do you bring them to understanding this and even becoming curious about this?
The short answer is gently. You know, the social programming in the West, the social software that has been instilled, is such a strong, strong piece of software. And it runs deep.
Yes.
It's base code, if you will, here. And so onboarding these folks, I take a position where, look, I don't expect you to believe it. In fact, I expect you not to believe it.
Yeah.
But I will say, probably there is some piece of you that recalls a time in your life where it's early in the morning, you're half asleep, you're half awake, and you wake up before the alarm rings. Or maybe there was a time where, you know, you're about to go out with your friends and you just get this nagging feeling that maybe I just shouldn't. And you find out something happened.
Yeah.
Or how about something much more prosaic? You know, there's a couple in a room. They had just been arguing for the last hour and you just walk in and that tension between them is in the air and is so palpable.
Yeah.
That you can cut it and you just want to leave. Where does that come from? So I take an approach where I'm not trying to force my opinion or my beliefs or my even my expectations on anyone. What I am doing is I'm holding the door for folks who think maybe, just maybe, there's something a little bit more to my life. Maybe there's just something a little bit more than what I've been told. And if you're curious, I'm holding the door just enough for you to peek through to decide for yourself.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to walk through the threshold, then I'm here to onboard you with protocols that make it repeatable, that integrates both the left and the right brain for a holistic approach. You know, because someone like me, I come from a background in tech, research, analytics. So I always think about things in terms of repeatability.
Yep.
And measurability. You know, I like to pair it up with the quantitative plus the qualitative. And I think that's this integrated approach is the way forward. Right? It allows the skeptic's voice to be heard, but also it allows the spiritualist to be heard. Because at the end of the day, like, all of our voices matter. And it's just a collection of stimuli and data that represents the whole.
Absolutely.
Right? It's a bit of like a gestalt, if you will.
Yes. So
that's my
yes.
approach.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because even over the course of the weekend, there was something that I brought up that I see on a lot of PK groups. I see it in a lot of PK videos, things like that. And that is the aluminum foil TP. And I brought up the idea of a Crookes radiometer, just being a science freak, and the idea that the Crookes radiometer is a tool of science that basically shows the way that photons create motion, that like light moves things inside of this vacuum when light hits the dark side of one of these aluminum foil probes, it pushes it and makes it move. And it's fascinating. But I was like, there, if one side of the aluminum foil is darker than the other, anything like that, you know, you could end up with all kinds of crazy little parts of physics that may be affected. Now, does that mean, and there was somebody who got very offended by the fact that I'm bringing this up, and I'm like, I'm just pointing something out. I'm not trying to crush. I'm not saying you're not moving it. My question would be, could you stop the Crookes radiometer from moving? That would be the real test, is put the light on, let the crooks move, and try to make it move the opposite direction. The same way that we were trying to make the hovering pot spin in the opposite direction or stop spinning, where it's like, if you can influence that intense magnetic field in that kind of way, then you can do that. And even with the water experiment that we did there, where we changed the conductivity of the water through intent,
significantly,
and in real time, that was fascinating to see, So the idea that, yes, we do influence the world around us. I say it on the show all the time. We are all responsible for every vibe that we drag into a room. We're all responsible for it. And over the course of the weekend, you actually taught a cool segment. Let's get into that real quick about magnetism. Here's a shot of you kind of teaching us the centering exercise. Because after we bent the spoons, you taught us how to magnetize the spoons and then actively, took just a random piece of silverware and magnetized it in the same way and put it up to the spoon, and the spoon spun when you were an inch away from it. It was crazy. It was wild. And I will show a video real quick of even myself after this. We did the exercise of doing the quarters on the wall, and you actively, let's see, there's the video of me, if I'm not mistaken. You had videotaped me actively putting a coin on the wall. There it is.
Amazing.
And it didn't stick for long, folks. Don't get me wrong, but here it is again. You can see me quite clearly. Here's the room of people.
You can clearly see it hanging for a brief moment too. Amazing. Right there.
Oh yeah. You see it hang? And what's wild is after that, there was a whole nother day of the conference, and then we left. So it was like a day and a quarter, because the next morning was the final morning. We left. We got our certificates, all that kind of stuff. But there were two people on your side of the room whose coins 2 days later were still hanging on the wall. That was without adhesive. That was they didn't lick the coin and put it up there. Their hand wasn't sweaty. It was just wild. These straight up pennies, which, just so you know, folks, copper, not magnetic. So not like you could stick a high intensity magnet in your hand and be like, oh, here we go. Not going to happen. Fascinating that 2 days later, those coins were still stuck to the wall, David, still stuck to the wall. I went up. I was the last person to leave property. And I went upstairs and checked, and they were still on the wall.
Wasn't that amazing?
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, so that's the thing, that's another thing I want our listeners to remember. Yeah, we don't expect you to believe right away that the intellect is there to protect you. And that's a good thing, right? But look, people are doing it. But if you would just set aside your intellect just for a brief moment, just allow yourself that joy in knowing that the world could be so much more, because you're going to find that the intellect will rob you of that moment where it's kind of like unwrapping a Christmas gift at Christmas, right? Like on the day of, you've got this present and you don't know what it is. And it's that shock and joy.
I find it very interesting because you have brought that up and mentioned it more than once tonight, the idea of the intellect getting in the way. Kimla brought it up at the conference. It is a huge check-in point for remote viewing, for controlled remote viewing is the check-in process before a session, where you decompress, where you talk about things that may be occupying your spare thoughts, where you cleanse that and get rid of that and that kind of stuff. And even the idea of an analytic overlay in remote viewing, like that's honestly my favorite part of viewing with a monitor, is that a monitor will kind of check you, like as you use the noun and go, huh, you know, kind of reminds me of a car. They'll go, great. Now let's get out of that right. Let's get out of that intellect and let's go back to the subconscious.
Totally. You know, I mean,
let's go back to what the subconscious is saying about the situation and stop analyzing the situation in real time.
Yeah. Even if we're not talking about the topic of psychic phenomenon or psionic capability, let's just talk about in the business sense.
Sure.
People know it's a thing where you overthink a thing.
Yep.
And like, even if you go back to test taking habits and strategies, they always tell you go with your first mind, because as you're doing like that multiple choice exam, the people who erase their answer and switch to another one, more often than not, they get it wrong. So there's something to be said about going with your first mind.
Yep.
And even worse, forget about doing it wrong. You might even get to the point where you're paralyzed because your intellect is in the way. So analysis paralysis is a big thing, right?
That was something that happened to me for literally years in my life, David. And I remember explaining it to a Spanish professor in college, because she was the one who pulled me aside. And I was like, I spend most of my day thinking about things that have happened and in a circular way, repeating them. And what happened if I did this? What happened if I did, like, literally overanalyzing and reanalyzing and reanalyzing the same situation to a point of literal inaction. To the point where you look up and it's like, holy crap, it's 3 p.m.
Yeah. Like, that's the crazy thing about human beings. We're one of the few animals that we are aware of that are constantly ruminating on our thoughts. Mm. But also we're always punishing ourselves for the deeds that we've done over and over again. I forget the stat, but it's something like 90% of our thoughts are the same thoughts and 80% of them are negative.
Yeah.
And so you think about that, and it's no wonder we can't tap into our psychic gifts and abilities, because if where your attention is and your energy goes there, if you're always stagnant, then how can you sense the world around you?
Yeah.
You know? And it goes back to what you were saying earlier. There's a whole lot to unpack. I do remember the conversation we had about, you know, putting a thing, the side wheel, under a piece of glass, but the photons would move it.
Yeah.
And that has to be addressed. We can't just, you know,
two silver veins in theory shouldn't, because you need the darker and the lighter to have the opposing. But at the same token, it could.
And we can't dismiss it. We have to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Because that gives us that entire synergy of our understanding of reality. You know, we have to address it so that we could piece it out or parcel it out to say, well, here's a variable that we should remove so that we can better learn about ourselves. It's not about you're right or he's right. We should care less about who's right. We should care about finding out the truth in this reality and how we affect it one variable at a time.
Yeah.
So that at the end of the day, we learn more about ourselves as a species. You know, we're going places. We're elevating right now. If we could just put aside our differences and focus in on the outcome of understanding ourselves more, can you imagine how far our human species would go and evolve?
Yeah. Yeah, if instead of imagining the barriers, we imagine the possibilities. And it literally is a mental shift like that. I remember the day that I had mentor and good friend of mine who used to run the bar that I worked at, asked me, like, Chris, how come you're always shooting sunshine up my ass? Like, all the time. And I was like, I guess I could focus on the 28 bad things that happen every night. You know, but if I can find the good thing that happened and focus on that, and how can we repeat that good thing? How can we wash, rinse, repeat the good thing that happened? We know about the bad things. Do we have to focus on the bad things? We know exactly. They happened. We can acknowledge they happened. You got to acknowledge they happened. However, you don't have to dwell on the fact that they happened. Dwell and celebrate the good thing. Dwell and celebrate on the good thing that happened last night. Not the 8 bad things. And let's see what we can do to grow that one good thing into like 3 good things next week. You know,
dude,
like
just
small incremental growths. You don't, totally. You're never going to eat an elephant in one bite. You won't. You have to eat it one bite at a time. And eventually, yes, you can eat an elephant, guaranteed, you know, you just have to do it in that kind of way. And you have to, it's the same way with, I think, pulling people out of harsh reality. Because I think people get very hung up with their preconceived notion of outcome, David. And something that I try to especially instill into people that have just started remote viewing is that your misses are more important than your hits. You're going to learn more from your misses than you are from your hits. As far as what you're feeling, why you're feeling it. Did you not go with your first feeling? Did you try to overanalyze it? If you can analyze those misses, you're going to learn a lot more rapidly about how you feel things and how you're connected to them, you know? It's fascinating to see that and to understand that concept that we as a mechanism of survival focus on negative all the time, you know, because that's what kept us alive in the wild. But it's when you catch the rabbit, now you need to focus on how you caught the rabbit. Cool. How'd we do it? How do we do it again next time? How do we do it again next time? How do we get that repeatable out of it so that we can stop surviving and start thriving with this stuff, you know, and really switch the brain mechanism over to a mechanism of thriving instead of just mere survival and getting through it.
You're hitting on something so important with just one example, and it makes me think two ways. It makes me think metaphysical and it makes me think practical. So on the metaphysical side, your decision to focus in on the positives versus ruminating on the negatives, isn't that in essence our free will?
Yep.
You know, therein lies our divinity and our agency.
Yep.
To decide in that micro moment, well, yeah, you know, I had a really crummy day, but I've got a roof over my head. I've got a wife that loves me. I've got wonderful kids. I just had a really good dinner even.
Yeah.
Dwelling in that gratitude, you decided to be in gratitude, and that's free will.
Yeah.
And on the practical side, let's just talk about like person who is constantly dwelling on the negatives. Now they're bitter, they're frustrated, they're probably rude to other people. And then they create this, they create a reputation for themselves of being hard to work with. And now people don't want to work with them.
Yeah.
And so now you've created a reality unknowingly where you repel people. And so you wonder why you can't manifest things or why success never comes your way. And then you get stuck in this victim mentality. And you created the bed that you're sleeping in.
Yeah. Yeah. It literally is a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point, and B is utterly changeable by your own dynamic. And once again, your own consent into that system. Like I say it all the time. If you want the person you're mad at to win, just keep on being mad. keep giving them your energy, you know, that goes absolutely nowhere except to anger.
I love that.
And even the concepts that we learned from yogis and stuff like that, and Buddhism over that weekend, the idea of anger is wisdom. Anger is wisdom because you've learned it's useless to be angry. You should learn that it's okay to be angry. It's okay to have that initial thought. It's not okay to dwell on it. It's not okay to bring it to some sort of fruition. It's not okay to ruminate on it, give it safe harbor, and give it water and food. That's not what you're supposed to do with it.
Totally.
Acknowledge it, because yes, it's a part of your root chakra. It's a part of your that initial fire that is moving you and fires the engine, and maybe might even make you be like, well, I won't let that happen again. And good for you for not.
Totally.
But you can't let that consume you in that kind of way. You can't let that be the focus of the energy, because at that point you're tainting what you're trying to manifest.
Yes. And it makes me think of a single word, ascension.
Mm.
You know, people hear ascension and they think, oh, you know, I'm going to be a regular Joe Schmo and all of a sudden I will reach enlightenment and nirvana, ascension. Yeah. But that kind of is like thinking about always hitting a grand slam in baseball.
That's right.
What if ascension can happen in a micro moment where, to your point, you know, like this person is stuck in these ill feelings, and in that moment, they raise their altitude of thinking a little bit. And so they escape being stuck in that rut because they're now vibrating at just a slightly higher vibration.
That's right.
And they continually do that. And in those micro moments, maybe even after like 10 minutes, their emotions would have changed.
Yeah.
Is that not a little bit of ascension?
Absolutely. And I think that's the huge part of this, David, that's why I called this segment training psi abilities, because I think what most people get wrong is, once again, that point of expectation. No different than manifestation or a prayer. You've prayed for something. However, you've also prayed for something to come in this exact box. And when it doesn't fit that box that you've given definition to, as to what you want or need, or what you believe you need, what you want, if you are not aligned with that, and if the universe is not aligned with that with you, doesn't matter if you have 85 people praying for it. You could have like 85 saints praying for it. It ain't going to happen because it's not within alignment. You know, it's not what's supposed to happen in that kind of way. And you may have to consider the fact that even the negative answer to your prayer might be the answer to the prayer that you needed. It might be the lesson that you needed at the time. You know, so it's fascinating to think that way and to begin to think that way, because at that point, yes, you are literally deconstructing the barriers that society has put up. Society has told us that when you pray for something and it doesn't happen, that's because that doesn't work.
Totally.
The problem is the hard definition you put on it and not the soft allowance of the work of the universe.
Yes. You know, the expectation to succeed is so strongly ingrained in us that oftentimes when we don't get that gratification of winning, it destroys our identity.
Yeah.
Or it destroys our persona. But then we forget that personas are just the mask that we put on day to day. And that's a transient thing.
Yep.
You know, it's a brief moment in time. Because you put on a persona at work and you come home and you take it off and you put on a different persona at home. But that's not really the real you, you know? And so take it from a practicing psychic now, you know, that deep, deep, deep identification with success manifesting itself into this large expectation when you first try out a thing is not the easiest route. Because guess what? If you're trying to hit a grand slam all the time, just thinking probabilistically, you won't.
Yeah.
Just worry about getting on base. So thinking about like putting the coins on the wall. By the way, I got to give a shout out to Dahlia. She's the one who taught me that trick, Dahlia and Alex. But start off small. Start off with a dime.
Yep.
Can you get it to hang just for a brief second like what you did? And then work your way up to a quarter. And you'll be surprised to see what you can stick to the wall. I've seen plastic cups stuck to the wall.
Yeah, this is a quarter. And this one stays up there for a minute. This is the one that I filmed just before you came over. That one stays up there for a few seconds. but it's the fact of believing that it's not even the fact of there is no spoon. It's the fact of you're harmonized with all of it and you don't care whether it happens or not.
Bingo. No expectations. I mean, yeah. Why do kids succeed when adults fail? Because no one ever told them that they couldn't succeed.
That's right.
They just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And you know, it's amazing that you bring that up because that is the absolute truth. As somebody who worked with kids for a good third of my life, David, from ages 4 to 40, we learn these things. We learn bad behaviors. If you throw 8 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds in a room together, there may be maybe a bullyish tendency. Maybe one or two are a little spoiled, something like that. We all have our own quirks in life. However, there is no ingrained hate inside of there. There is no, you look different than me. You sound different than me. There's none of that, you know, and there is this beautiful point of just acceptance and play that is just there. And that has to be literally unlearned. We have to ingrain it in somebody's head that these things aren't what you're supposed to do, that these things aren't what you're supposed to feel anymore, things like that. So like we literally ingrain that out of ourselves with society. And it's fascinating to see exactly how fast that occurs. That by age 8, you know, you have kids talking religion to each other on the playground. Things like that, because they've heard these conversations go on at home, or 2 days a week their family goes to this religious thing. And it's fascinating to see where these conversations come from in the conversation and vocabulary of a child, you know, and what their understandings of these capital T truths are. You know, I have been asked the deepest, most confounding question by an 8-year-old and had the most vapid question in the world asked by a 45-year-old. Like in like within an hour of each other, you know,
age ain't nothing but a number, they say.
Well, and it's the fact of we're open to a different level of exploration at some point in our life. We're open to seeing things through a different veil or without a veil even, you know, where these things are just an accepted fact. They just are. And if you talk about them as though they are, not as though they're strange, not as though they're weird, things like that. Like I have an 8-year-old, we're practicing mind sight, you know, he experienced it at Psy Games and was fascinated by it. Just fascinated by the fact that he could see color with a blindfold on, you know, and he's not Kreskin. I'm not going to say he's like the lady that won this last year where it was like every single ring on every colored peg in 2 minutes. He ain't at that level. He's maybe shooting 10%, man. But the fact that he's shooting 10%, like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yes.
That's just wild. That's wild to begin with. The fact that he even just wants to keep shooting even at a 10 percentile.
Correct.
You know, a lot of people would quit at 10%.
Yes. I mean, look at your video about the coin. There, that is a perfect example of perspective, because you can either say, ah, crap, it didn't stay on all day like the other coin.
Yeah.
And there you go. You just missed the point. You didn't see that it hung there for a brief moment. And that's what you should be centering yourself on, that that's you right. even got it to hang for a brief moment.
Yeah. This 3 seconds right here is three of the most joyful seconds of my life. Man, and that's all it is. It's 3 seconds on the clock that it stays up there. But the fact that it stayed up there for 3 seconds is just like, wow, wow.
And the joy that you experienced in 3 whole seconds probably could have been even deeper than just like an hour long of a boring thing.
Yeah,
right. It's contextual.
Well, and it's interesting because when I bent my first spoon, Angela Thompson Smith walked me through this. We were all at a bar. I was there with my pina colada on that cruise. That was my drink of choice for the weekend. But as she explained how to do it, I'd tried before. I'd been to parties. I tried at the IRVA conference in Menlo Park with no success. All kinds of things. But when I tried with her, she was like, the trick is just to acknowledge that the spoon is there, that the spoon is with you. And then think about something that you love, think about a moment in life, something that you do. It doesn't, whatever brings you elated joy, whatever you tie with the most joyful thing that you can think of, enjoy that. Think about it, welcome it in, and welcome the spoon to be part of that joy. As one with you, as one with the universe, send that joy out into the universe and ask the spoon to come be part of it, and just feel it, and feel it become part of you. And it was at that moment that I felt it kind of warm up, and it bent, and it just went. I didn't force it any more than just that. I was holding it exactly like this so that I wasn't like, you know, like I just pushed together and it bent with nothing more than my fingertips. And it was fascinating to me, fascinating that I did that, that I made that happen. And over that weekend, doing this with forks and that kind of stuff, hit me to a different, and with the coin on the wall, hit me to a different level of elation, David, where, yes, I am now confirmed in the fact that there is something different, that there is something that even I can tap into if I take the time and find my space to tap into that. So before we let you go in the last few minutes, how does the average person begin to find that? How do they begin to tap into that, to feel the tingle of connection in that kind of way, David?
You know, that lady just gave you the entire secret to everything that I'm able to tap into. It really is that simple. But I also think about, for the folks who are looking for like practical ways of doing it, is this simple. Grab a piece of cloth, maybe felt, maybe velvet. Sit down on a chair. Lay that piece of velvet on your lap and just run your fingers over that piece of fabric and ask yourself, how soft does this piece of fabric feel? And be in that moment and tell yourself, geez, this little piece of fabric feels really good. And it feels good to run my finger along this fabric and stay in that moment of feeling good and allow that feeling of happiness and joy just for that brief moment and stay there. And you practice that. This is what I mean about, like, don't worry about hitting the grand slam, get on base. So if you need training wheels, it's okay.
Yeah.
Get that piece of paper or that piece of felt or that piece of cloth and run your fingers over it and get into a meditative state. And then you begin to tap into your internal energy. And then try to hold that for a minute. And then the next day, try to hold that for 5. And maybe the next day, you're able to hold it for 10. And then try to imagine yourself magnifying that feeling in your heart. Like maybe it just starts off with, it felt so good. Mm. And then now pair that with a thought of someone you love or a moment. And if you want to get more into your senses, take your favorite cologne or fragrance and spray yourself. Now you're in a mood where you're touching something good. Mm. You're smelling something good. And you think about something good. That's 3 out of our 5 or 4 senses, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're tying maybe olfactory senses to
yes.
That.
Yes.
Which builds
you're gonna
memory.
You're going to get to a point where you're going to feel really good. And you're going to forget about the woes of today. You're going to forget about those meetings that you got tomorrow. And you're going to be in the moment.
Yeah.
And you're going to have this knowing that right now is the right time. And then you got to get curious. And the last piece is be confident and explore. And now try sticking a quarter to the wall. Or put on a mask. Go out there and see if little spots don't start developing, right, in your mask. And then enjoy and revel in that moment. Don't let your intellect rob you from that. And just take baby steps. So if you were to multiply these senses every day by a factor of 2, where would you be at the end of the year? Like what type of abilities or sensory stuff would you be able to unlock after repeatedly doing this for a whole year?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how a normal person can get into it slowly and have a little bit of like training wheels as you go along.
Absolutely. David, thank you so much for your time tonight, man, for your candid candor and conversation regarding this. But I think it's one of the most important topics out there. I say it all the time. It is hands down my favorite community that I belong to. Out of all of them, I think that it is the most research-oriented community that I belong to. It is the most data-driven community that I belong to. And at the same time, the most woo community that I belong to. You know, it's the wildest intersection in the world of literal science and woo. And when I get into Sasquatch, when I get into UFOs, UAPs, and people like, these things are conflictatory. They can't exist at the same time. Science and woo. I'm like, I think you are utterly wrong. I think that they can perfectly coexist. And here's an example of it. So yeah. Yeah, it's big topics, it's big things, and things that make a lot of people out there uncomfortable in some ways that ug them out. So I want to thank you for taking the time tonight to share your gift with the audience, to share your story of discovery and your journey on this path with us. So
absolutely,
I can't
it's,
wait to
it's
you
been
come
my
on
pleasure. Again. Thank you for having me, and I think for the folks that have just heard us just have a great dialogue between two friends, that the key takeaway is, yes, you too can do it. But also, as you are developing your senses, and for those that are really excelling in this field, know that ethics plays a big part of it.
Yes.
Because, you know, we're now sort of like at the forefront of a frontier of an evolving species that we call humanity. And, you know, all this power that we've unlocked, it could be used for good or it could be used for personal gain.
Yeah.
And I guess what I want to leave the audience feeling and knowing is that it really is up to us to ensure that we're bringing everybody along. You know, that's the whole point of the Psy Games. That's the whole point of what we're doing here, talking about repeatability and talking about protocols, but also talking about ethics and having an open dialogue to make sure that everybody feels inclusive, everybody feels respected. Because if you think about it, for those hardcore scientists who just shun this stuff, if on the other end of the spectrum, the other side of the pole, the folks who are so deeply in this where they won't accept the science, are you not guilty of doing the same thing that is being done to you?
Yeah.
So you're not helping the cause, really. You're just perpetuating it.
Yeah. Yeah. Perpetuating the barriers to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have said that
together.
Totally. David, thank you so much once again. Before we let you go, where do you recommend people go to find out about training? Anything like that? I know you don't have a website, that kind of stuff. But if people want to get in touch with you and find out more, that kind of thing, how can they get a hold of you? Where do you recommend people go?
Well, for sure, folks can get a hold of me on Instagram. My handle is Intuitive David. So you can find a lot of my demos there. Right now, it's mostly demos, but I will be switching soon to more educational content. You know, a little quick guides on breath work, setting intention. And then eventually, once people are able to master that, we'll get more into workshops where people can witness firsthand how to do the things that we just talked about today. Outside of that, you know, I think if you're really looking for structured learning, I would definitely recommend teams like VibraVision out in Utah. Mm. You know, I've done Wing Chun Kung Fu in the past. I've done Tai Chi. So I come from like a martial arts background. And VibraVision also is rooted in martial arts, more Patiputi.
Yep.
And I'll say of all the training that I've gone through so far since the Psy Games last year, VibraVision has the most complete system that I've seen.
Okay.
For developing your intuitive abilities. You know, because when we talk about mindsight, there's two levels of mindsight, right? There is one where you can see things in real time, as if you're using your eyes right now. And there is another level of mindsight. It's a developing field, so there's a lot of names for it. One is intuitive sight, but also, you know, Alec Figueroa, this independent researcher, just recently taught me of another term for it that might be more apt, called prophantasia.
Interesting.
And that's slightly different because mind sight is something that is physically experienced.
Yep.
Whereas prophantasia kind of accounts for the thing that is not physically experienced. So think about like people seeing auras or people seeing our bioluminescence.
Yeah.
You know, we're giving off light at all times and people are able to see it. It's not necessarily real time, but it is a form of vision.
Sure. Sure.
So VibraVision is a very holistic system that's really good for that. Also, if you are very keen on just developing real time, Vision Without Eyes, Rob Freeman and Pat Mielke, man, they are a wonderful team out in Florida. I love their protocol because it really centers around play and exploration. And they've got some really cool protocols and techniques to just tap into that.
Yeah.
So VibraVision, Vision Without Eyes, and of course, Psy Games. Psy Games Intensive is really good because it really anchors down into the history of things. You know, sort of like the other programs just talk about how to do the thing. But with Psy Games, it's a lot of learning about the roots of it all. For example, energy management, understanding yang versus yin energy and how to conserve energy. Because I'll tell you, before I started training and it's just kind of being a natural, I just go out and use my energy. And at the end of the week, I just feel completely depleted.
Yeah, just husk.
You know, and that's a real thing, right? It's just like working out. For example, like yang energy is like punching. you can punch all day, but eventually you're going to get tired. Somewhere, somehow, you need to go back and figure out the balance to that and get to yin energy, where it's about recuperation, but it's also about soft power or redirection of things.
Yeah.
And so having that balance of both energies makes you a holistic person. But also, you think about it in other ways, you know, the yang stuff allows you to do stuff, but then the yin stuff allows you to be okay and have compassion with yourself when you don't.
Yeah.
You know, so you're not always going to have success in that way, in the way that you want. It'll come to you when you're ready. But being practiced in both sides of the wheel, having a holistic outlook, makes it so that you can get the learnings even in your losses. And they become more than losses, they become lessons. And it's kind of like what you said, there's a lot to be gained from your losses if you turn it into lessons.
That's right. That's right.
So those are my recommendations: VibraVision, Vision Without Eyes, Psy Games, and just go out there and have fun.
Absolutely. Be David, once again, thank you so much, man. I greatly appreciate it. It's been more than fun. I can't wait till your next visit. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience, all right? While you are online, everybody, following Intuitive David over on Instagram, as well as visiting Psy Games International, psygamesinternational.com, is where you can go to buy your tickets for the upcoming Psy Games in Charlotte, North Carolina, July 31st to August 2nd. I will be there. It's going to be absolutely phenomenal for the second year in a row. I cannot wait. While you're online checking out both of those, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is where you can find all the light, or CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can find all of the YouTube channels of our guests, where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can also find your link to the Field Observation and Encounter Log by CuriousResearch.org. If you are a researcher into the world of para, doing lab work of your own, if you are if you're a researcher in the world of cryptozoology, UFOs, out doing field work, this is your pocket field log to write down the data in the field as it happens to you, so it is ready for science come the day that you need it to be so. That's also where you can get your copy of the Remote Viewing Session Journal. If you're a remote viewer, this is a way to put all of your sessions together. Frequently, you have numerous sessions on one target, things like that. So this is a place where you can put all of your sessions in one place and be able to coalesce that data and look at things uninterrupted, back to back, that kind of things, and see your misses, chronicle them, that kind of stuff. So stop on by CuriousResearch.org, everybody. Thank you so much for your time tonight. Thank you so much for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious, and remember, the other side is always watching.